Did you hear what he did there, Bill? He did, it's going to get cold, and then he said, Burbank.
Yeah.
I didn't do that on purpose.
You're good.
It worked. Whatever happened, it worked.
Sometimes I put stories in the news for you, guys.
I feel bad because you alerted us that there was a story coming for us, but we were saying goodbye.
Changing of the guards.
We were saying goodbye.
You're not going to see Cochran tomorrow? What's the saying goodbye?
There's a lot of rigmarole going on. No one gets out of their seat as quickly as I do when you take over for the Wintrust business lunch.
And I appreciate that.
When Steve's show is over, it's much like if you've ever seen the circus leaving town. It's very similar to that. There's a lot of picking up of stakes, pulling stakes out of the ground.
We hold trunks and tails.
Yeah,
Steve Cochran.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it got a little crazy, but I know that there was something having to do with the world of games.
The National Toy Hall of Fame announced its class this morning.
Who's involved? And this is a. If you are a gamer, a toy, this is the most prestigious honor you can possibly have.
So this
you
is
are a
class.
Toy.
Yes.
Clue.
Should have been in years ago, decades
it's
ago.
It's not in?
It should have been in a long
now.
Time ago.
You guys didn't even know what this group was two seconds ago. Do you
know?
We are
big fans.
The Wiffle Ball.
Again, that's a classic, the Wiffle Ball.
These should have been in years ago, before the Moody Blues.
I think one of the requirements is it has to inspire generations, so...
But Clue and the Wiffle Ball, those are tried and true. Those are all stars.
The Paper Airplane.
Stupid.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
What?
I mean, it should exist.
I can make one right now. It's
should
not
be
a
in the Hall of Fame.
It's kind of weird because it's not a product.
Right.
Yeah,
okay, have you seen the commercial for the paper and box company or industry?
No.
Where the little boy's, his dad is in the military. So he writes notes to him on a paper airplane and throws them over his fence?
No.
Adorable.
Oh, makes me cry every time.
Still not a toy.
Old guy sends it off to his dad. The dad sends it back, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it's a great commercial.
All right, that one should not be in.
Is a rubber band in? Because I've had numerous hours of fun with a rubber band.
You put it on your index finger and you shoot it?
And the noogie was narrowly defeated. No.
Oh, boy. I'm like, Bill and I looked at each other like, you've got to be kidding
Wait,
me.
Wait, though. The other finalists this year,
yeah,
Risk...
We just talked about that
yesterday.
The other
day,
Magic 8 Ball, Matchbox Cars, My Little Pony, Pez Candy Dispensers.
Those should be in.
Uno.
Great game.
Probably,
I love it.
Probably, yeah.
Play Food.
No.
And Sand.
How do you put sand? I don't think sand should be in the toy.
Oh, my God. I had a sandbox growing up. I got tied to it when I tried to run away from home.
By my mom. By your mom. Even worse. Like, the mere thought that you got tied to it is bad, but your mom is the one who did it.
I mean, just because you play with it doesn't make it... Like, Ryan Burrow suggested fire.
Right? Okay,
how many
pyro.
Kids play with fire?
Right.
You guys, it was really great fun to have a sandbox. I was the envy of the neighborhood. My grandfather made me this amazing sandbox that had a lid with wing nuts that you unscrewed, and then the lid would come down so cats wouldn't use it as a litter box overnight.
Yeah.
So at least I was tied to the coolest sandbox ever.
Can I tell you something that will sound dirty, but it's not?
I love when you play this game.
My friend Dan Skiles, who lived a block away, had a sandbox, like an incredible sandbox. Like, honestly, the cream of the crop when it came to sandbox is such a nice sandbox. And we would do a thing. Now, keep in mind, we were like in first grade or second grade. So we would build a giant mound, and a boy would start to tunnel through with his hand on one side, and a girl would on the other side. And then when they got to the middle... You would hold hands for a second.
And then the sand would collapse on them.
It's like 7 minutes in sand.
Very romantic. At least you get some privacy.
But it was, I mean, for a six-year-old, that was as good as life got right there.
How big was the sandbox?
It was immense. It was so big. Okay. And it had a cover on it so that when it
would... Did Nino build that one, too?
No, your uncle didn't build it.
Just to clarify, the finalist this year wasn't the sandbox.
It was sand.
It was sand.
Well, what do you put in the sandbox? What do you play with at the beach? Although I guess that falls into the paper airplane thing.
I don't think sand is a toy. Sand is just a natural. Now,
what about silly sand?
Silly sand, you could almost make an argument for, except that it, as great as it looked on the commercials, it was stupid. It looked so great on the commercials.
It gave me 5 minutes of pure joy.
And that's it, though, mm-hmm. right? And then it would harden. Mm-hmm. Like, I always wanted it, and my parents said, no. We had shag carpeting because it was the 70s. And they said, no, it'll get in the carpeting, and you'll never get it out. And we went to a friend's house, and they had it, and it did. It just ruined their carpeting. It was horrible.
All right. Now, how long has this Toy Hall of Fame been in service?
I think about 20 years, 15 or 20 years.
And
there's the 60 previous honorees.
Okay, the Matchbox car is just getting
that
in there now.
That should be in there.
It's not in. It was a finalist. Didn't
and
make it.
And it didn't make it.
No,
it's
just the Clue wiffle ball and the paper airplane.
The paper airplane is a travesty,
that's
and that's stupid. And who do I write to?
That's ridiculous.
I'm starting a Facebook group.
Do you remember every year hopes would be high that Ron Santa would get into this thing, and he never. He did posthumously, sadly. But boy, what a travesty!
The paper
that
airplane
was.
Got in before him.
I know that shouldn't be. All right. Well, we're happy about Clue. Should have happened years ago.
Is Monopoly's got to be in there already?
Monopoly would probably first ballot. Right.
You know what? I read this. I'm going to blame this on someone else.
Misinformation and Mr. Information
after
up in the newsroom.
After you said that, I started looking at it.
What?
So it looks like there are 12 finalists. So I read that incorrectly.
Oh,
they
okay.
just wrote it in a way. So the other finalists. So
Clue, they're not in
ball,
yet.
Clue, Wiffle Ball, Paper Airplane are finalists along with the Pez candidates. So Sand still has a chance, it looks like.
Pez should be over a paper airplane.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. We should have Professor Plum on with us at some point to talk it up to see if maybe that'll make some influence.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very confused now.
Can you do it, Professor Plum?
I don't know how he talked.
Make
I have
it
no
up.
Idea.
We'll talk to him next.
Do you remember they made a movie, the Clue movie?
That had a bunch of different endings.
Three different endings, and you never knew, like every theater was given any of the endings, so depending on where you saw it and when you saw it, you could see any of the different endings.
I know there's a high school doing Clue this weekend, and they're doing a different ending every night.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That is cool.
That's excellent.
Tim Curry was in that movie, and I just want you to all know that I saw it last night.
And?
It's really good, but Tim Curry was a way better Pennywise than
Sarsgaard.
Sarsgaard.
Really?
I mean,
surprised
different.
To hear that.
It's like this was a creepier It.
Yeah.
But Tim Curry was really good.
And you saw it in a theater. It's you and your son and nobody else.
We were the only two people. Dylan and I went 6 o'clock showing, brand new theater, AMC Oakbrook. It's like a country club.
Yeah.
There's a whole new area in the upstairs area of Oakbrook. You walk into this AMC theater. And it's the reclining seats.
Nice.
And so you can pick out which ones you want. So she got everything on the screen and said, which seats do you want? And I said, they're all open. She goes, yeah, it's probably just going to be you two. So we picked exactly in the center, right behind the handicapped rows.
I've never heard of that before.
No one was in it.
Select exactly where
Well, it's reserved seating. And
the whole thing is?
Yeah. I hate that. Yeah, theaters. And
it's funny because Dylan's like, we better get our tickets in advance. And this is the last time we're going to see it before it goes off the, you know, from big theaters. I want to see it on the big screen. I said, check online and see how many seats are sold. And he goes, none so far. And I said, then I'm not getting them in advance.
Right.
And there were none.
Does it cost more or not? It's the same price if you get them in advance.
I don't think it matters, but I wanted to make sure we got there on time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He wasn't sure which Oakbrook Theater it was. So then I'm like, let's just go there. The only people in the theater, I did scream at one point.
Did you?
And he laughed at me. And I swear to God, I felt like we were in our kick-ass living room with a giant screen.
What if someone had come in? Would you have asked them to wait until the next showing? Our showing. We requested an empty theater.
I couldn't do that.
Was it scarier without anyone else there?
Honestly, yes. It truly was, because if something happened, there was no one to rely on to help you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fear is what makes Pennywise get you.
Yeah.
So we were not afraid.
Oh, good.
And I could get a giant beer, which was awesome.
Okay, I hate to do this.
Go on.
Are you wrong again?
I just want to make sure.
Oh, no. Of all the stories you've ever done at WGN, I've never heard more retractions than this Hall of Fame
and
toy
And he brought
story.
It back. You guys, I did a story for you.
Yeah. I know.
Should have just let it
What's
go.
What's the true version of the story?
So it looks as if, I'm reading all these different newspaper accounts, but Clue, the Wiffle Ball, the Paper Airplane made it. And the others were finalists that were announced earlier that didn't make it.
Oh, okay.
So
that's
Sand,
what you kind of originally said.
Yes, I did.
And Sand is
I
in?
It. Sand is not in, but Sand is eligible next year.
All right. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Sand. We hope that we have a better finish next year. We'll take a quick break.
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh.
No,
a retraction.
Stop it.
Hold on.
No, I'm good.
And then I want to share with you something disturbing that Bob Costas said yesterday.
I love
Bob Costas, too. He said something kind of earth-shattering. We'll explain what it is next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, it's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you would like to join in, you can. 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. Are we all in agreement that Bob Costas is pretty good at what he does?
Best of the best. Not being a huge sports lover, I could listen to him talk about any sport and be enthralled.
He was, for a couple of years, the host of Later on NBC. And no matter who the guest was, sometimes it was a musical guest, sometimes it was a politician, sometimes it was somebody from the world of comedy. He was so well-schooled on everything. Not just, we know him originally from sports, so when he had to have a sports guest on, you'd go, well, of course, he can talk to Ken Norton about boxing, because he knows everything about sports. But then you got guests from other walks of life, and he was just as good, if not better.
He was better.
So good.
And just so, like, calming.
Right.
You know, he was unflappable.
Right. Although sometimes I remember three different episodes where Richard Lewis was his guest and he couldn't get a sentence out because he'd be laughing so hard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Richard Lewis just put him away.
Richard Lewis is pretty funny.
All right. So Bob Costas, longtime sports announcer, longtime talk show host, spoke yesterday about the future of football and explained that it is extremely grim. That the football that we know today as one of our major sports isn't going to be that way much longer. As far as longtime sports broadcaster Bob Costas is concerned, the future of football in the United States is clear and it's bleak. The reality of this game is that it destroys people's brains, he said on Tuesday night. Now, we already knew that, but it gets really serious when a guy who is that close to the world of sports says, uh-oh, we're in trouble. This football thing is getting out of hand.
Isn't he kind of the host of Sunday Night Football?
Yeah.
When he doesn't have pink eye.
From time
remember
to time,
that from the Olympics?
Yeah, he had to take a little
break.
Why
is he wearing sunglasses?
Speaking at a roundtable discussion at the University of Maryland, Bob Costas, who hosted Football Night in America on NBC for more than a decade, said the sport could collapse over time, barring a development in technology to make it reasonably safe. He said that the decline of football, which was once a cash machine, is the most significant story in American sports. I tend to agree with him there, because we're all kidding ourselves to think that the game will go on as it has gone on for decades without something happening, because it's the proof is there.
Yeah.
These guys are literally killing themselves.
Slowly.
And I used literally correct. They are killing themselves by playing the game of football. The cracks in the foundation are there, Bob Costas said. The day-to-day issues, as serious as they may be, they may come and go, but you cannot change the nature of this game. I certainly would not let, if I had an athletically gifted 12 or 13-year-old son, I would not let him play football. Again, that says a lot because he has made his living broadcasting sports, and for him to say, if I had a son and he wanted to do this, no way. I've been watching the results. It's not pretty. I wouldn't let him do it.
Although I feel bad for parents that do let their kids play, and no one is judging them. I'm certainly not. I'm just glad my kids aren't athletes.
I would be so stuck because I would want to leave it up to them. I would present my best case of saying, look at these former NFL players. And I know people go, well, it's different. They're playing in school. They're not getting hit by 350-pound linemen. But it's just so dangerous.
I know.
It's just so dangerous. Costa spoke alongside USA Today sports columnist Christine Brennan, ESPN's Tony Kornheiser, and Mike Wyborn at the university's annual Shirley Povich Symposium, named after late Washington Post sports journalist. Kornheiser likened football's trajectory to that of boxing, saying that safety concerns could make the game obsolete in the coming decades. Kornheiser, again, a guy who's around the sport always.
And boxing has changed tremendously. There aren't as many matches. There aren't as many things going on anymore.
It doesn't seem like it, but I attribute that to the fact that there's not as many charismatic. Like, they've always been able to kind of use one or two boxers as their poster children, and those
Lennox
guys
Lewis.
Don't seem to be there now. You know? If you had
Roy
a guy
Jones
that
Jr.
was a little... Yeah. If you had a guy that had a little more, I don't know...
Panache?
Yeah.
Pizzazz?
Panache and pizzazz.
Which one are
what
you?
What a fight would that be? There's your rock and sock robot matchup. Panache versus pizzazz.
There aren't any superstars exactly, and that last no. I can't think of the guy's name.
Wouldn't that be a great lunch place, Panache?
Panache? Yeah. I got to call Melman again. It's not going to happen this year, and it's not going to happen in 5 or 10 years, Kornheiser said, but Bob Costas is right. At some point, the cultural wheel turns just a little bit, almost imperceptibly, and parents say, I don't want my kids to play. And then it becomes only the province of the poor who wanted for economic reasons to get up and get out. Now, I've heard that argument for the last couple of years, that we're looking in a generation to where if you're affluent at all, if you have any kind of money bankrolled at all, you say to your kid, you're not playing this game, and the game will only be played by people who need the money.
Hey, it's happening. I mean, there are already stories of football programs stopping.
Belvedere, Illinois, 815 just says, has seen a huge decrease in players because parents aren't allowing their kids to play. The writing's on the wall, sadly.
Highland Park's Park District dropped tackle football.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Just flag?
No. They're playing flag now.
They're playing
just
only
flag.
They dropped, Oh.
And you know, I don't know this. This is only me talking to other guys around where I live in Deerfield and Highland Park, and the schools are having a hard time fielding some of the younger teams. Because
Steve,
people aren't going out. So, I mean, I have no doubt that's the case.
A year and a half ago on 60 Minutes, they tackled this. Where's the future of football? I didn't mean it that way, but it worked out nicely. All right, so several different people in charge of athletic programs at colleges came forward and said, the reality is that our football program pays for everything else. Every other sport, every other activity is paid for because of our football program. And if we were to try to make any kind of decision where we cancel our football, it would be economic suicide. We wouldn't have the money to do anything. That's how big the game has been.
That's going to change.
Well, that's true, but there are also many schools that survive without football and do well.
I hope so.
I mean, I went to Marquette. That's a basketball school.
Right.
You know. I was Columbia College's football team.
Outstanding. Really good. We were unbeaten while I was there. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break.
Not everything. Don't laugh at everything.
Sometimes I can't help myself,
Sometimes
Steve.
Steve, you can't. It's, you know. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm crying
Look
already.
Look at just the theme song. And it's a very long theme song. Sorry we had to play the whole thing there.
I just love that This Is Us on NBC has a short theme song because I'm ready to get in there and have a good cry.
Now, you've not seen this week's episode. A Tuesday night is the night that This Is Us is on, but technology being what it is, people watch it anytime
yes.
they feel like it, so you've not seen this week's episode
yet. I have not seen
yet.
This week's episode.
All right. I'm going to say I don't like to use this over more than I need to, but there is a spoiler alert involved here as to the storyline that took place on Tuesday. Here's what it is on This Is Us. The family has adopted one of their children, obviously. Randall is adopted. It's a white family that has adopted an African-American baby. So in the context of the show, they're going back in time to show that process of when they adopted him. And the family is in front of a judge saying to the judge that we've had Randall for months and months and months, and we love him and we want to formally adopt him. The judge, played by the great actor Delroy Lindo, doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't want to give this family Randall. And then they confront him and they say, why? We love him. He's our son. We've had him for months. I think at that point it's a year. We've had him and we love him and we want to keep him. And he explains that he wants Randall to go to an African-American family, not a white family. He then makes a speech where he backs up his claims, and within the speech is the N-word. I'll play you that speech right now. This is from Tuesday night's This Is Us.
That child belongs with a black family, Mr. and Mrs. Pearson. How else will he see himself, understand who he is?
Because we will teach him.
Mrs. Pearson, I was 9 years old before I understood that I was black, but I never really understood what my blackness meant until a white man called me a
Matt McGill joins us right now. Matt is a media consultant and a Chicago radio personality and a friend of mine. Matt, how are you?
Doing good, Bill. Glad to join you guys.
Thanks for being here.
You know, the unemployed radio personality is
currently. Hang in there.
Well, you were on WVON, correct, Matt?
Yes, absolutely. So as you can imagine, this topic and the use of the N-word is something that I've talked about a lot, whether it's been in movies more recently. We've talked about it over the years with Samuel L. Jackson being in Quentin Tarantino movies where he's used the N-word frequently. But, you know, the general rule is it's okay for a black person to use it. When a white person uses it, it's going to be a little trouble. However, when you're talking about movies, and in this case, a television show that is a scripted show, if it's important to the dialogue and to the scene, then I think for the most part, it's acceptable, especially in this case. You're talking about somebody like Delroy Lindo.
Mm-hmm.
And in this scenario, this is a real-life scenario. There are white families adopting black kids. We know it, high-profile white celebrities adopting black kids. And so this is a real-life situation that put...
Oh, Matt, are you there?
We'll try and get... All right, we you dropped out a little bit, Matt, so...
Yeah, reiterate that last thought for us.
Well, I mean, this is... Well, I was just basically saying this is real-life... situation.
Yeah.
White couples adopt black kids all the time. And Delroy Lindo is somebody who can bring that point home.
We were talking off the air, and I said, I do understand there's a part in This Is Us where, you know, doing something that white people don't normally do, Randall met a friend and had some help doing that. So there are differences for sure. I don't know that that word needed to be brought out.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? If you look back in the history of television, I'm old enough to remember some of the 70s sitcoms where the N-word was
Sanford and Son.
Sanford and Son. I think All in the Family, I think, had a couple of times where they used it. It's interesting now how we don't use the word, or a lot of people are offended by it when it's used. Like I said, if it's scripted and it is making a point, especially a serious point like this one that Delroy Lindo was trying to make in this scene, I think it can be acceptable. Now, if it's unscripted, if you're caught on a hot mic, like Michael Richards used to be on Seinfeld, remember his incident? Of course, that's going to be trouble.
That's a very good point, actually, because it's put in there to be an exclamation point.
And it was not gratuitous. Wendy, I know you didn't see it.
Yeah.
I don't think they were looking to shock anybody. It did shock people. I read dozens of tweets after the episode from people saying, hey, I'm watching the show, and I watch it with my family, and all of a sudden this word comes out of nowhere, and I get that, but for that character, for that judge to make his point, and it was an important point of why he thought Randall should go to a black family, I almost think that that word, and I never thought I'd say this, it was almost necessary that it be used to get that point across.
Yeah, and not only that, it was a replay. They were going back in time in the scene. And so that's part of it as well. How else could he make this point to this family? You know, how else can he, you know, it's almost like if I'm a father and my son joins the army and he's about to go out there on the front line. If I haven't been out on the front line, there's only so much of my life experience that I can tell him about what this experience is going to be about, right? I can't prepare him for being on the front line,
right,
in the theater of war, if I'd never been there. And the reality of this scene is this white couple will never be, as much as they've lived and understand black and white and hatred and bigotry and racism as it exists in this country, they will still never be able to tell that kid what it's like to be a black child and to be called that word, which is going to happen to him.
Yep.
That's
so
true. That is really
Matt
true.
Matt McGill is our guest. He is a media consultant. We're talking about last week's episode of This Is Us, which was on NBC. What are your thoughts? Did you see it? Did it bother you? Was that word necessary? Was it gratuitous in your opinion? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll be back after this. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. The what? No?
Sorry, I might have given you something early.
Later on, I will tell you about the Wexler Real Estate Group, but not now.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Bill. Stay tuned for that, everybody.
My fault.
Information about the Wexler Real Estate Group to follow later in the show. Matt McGill is our guest. He's a media consultant. We're talking about Tuesday night's episode of This Is Us, a very, very powerful scene that has some people upset. Why? Because the N-word was used. A judge deciding the case for the Pearsons as to whether or not they could adopt an African-American son, the Pearsons are a white family adopting an African-American son, use the N-word, saying that your son will hear that word and he needs a black parent to explain to him what that word is all about. Several texts about this. One says, this is from 312, that was the first time I've heard the N-word used that I was not offended. I usually shudder when I hear it, but This Is Us presents life so well that I did not shudder at hearing it. The show is awesome. I've said in the past, Matt, that The only time I could hear the word and not be offended was when Richard Pryor would use it, because to me it right. made sense.
I know. And you know, Richard Pryor, when you think about his comedy, his brand of comedy, and what it did at the time, he made a lot of people feel comfortable about a lot of words that we didn't think we'd feel comfortable
right.
about back in the day.
Right.
But here's what's interesting about the use of this word. Within the African-American community, there are going to be people on both sides, right? There are going to be people that agree with me that this was a good use of the word. It was appropriate for the scene to drill this point home. And there are going to be some people like you, Wendy, that think that it was inappropriate and that there's never a time or space to use this word. So within the African-American community, there's going to be the same hearty, robust debate about this word. I've talked about this several times when I used to do the show, and there are people that would call in and say, there's never, this word needs to be eliminated. It was never intended to do anything good for our community. And then there's some people who say the history of this word needs to be taught so that people understand, you know, how it's marginalized and reduced the African-American community.
Now, Matt, I will say I haven't seen the episode yet. I'm going to watch it tonight. Bill, you say it wasn't really gratuitous. It was somewhat necessary. And I'm starting to think this follows a time Jack and Rebecca Pearson, the two main characters, they're three kids are in their 40s now, or 40. So this is when they were trying to adopt Randall, which would make it 39 years ago, your math.
1978.
So this word was bandied about a little more frequently back then. And I could see a judge truly feeling that back then in 1978, that a black kid should be raised by a black family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think, you know, when you think about 1978 and adoption at that time, interracial adoption, you know, it was very controversial during that time. And during the black nationalist movement, and this is post-civil rights era, you're talking about in the late 70s, people had strong feelings about that. And to Bill's point, 1978, that was Richard Pryor's heyday.
Mm-hmm.
That was his sweet spot right there.
Yes, it was. And Matt, please tell me that both Webster and Different Strokes prove to us beyond any shadow of a doubt that an African-American child could grow up very happily in a white family.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, those are important shows. You're talking about it. What would be even more interesting is an episode where a black family's trying to adopt a white kid
yes.
and raising him. Now, wouldn't that be a scene for
yes.
a television show?
Yes. Now, since
Webster was not a quality show, okay? Maybe it was ground paving.
You
but
take it back. Now, Matt, let's talk about something you hinted at a little while ago about the lesson. I guarantee you, and several people texted this, I was reading all these tweets and texts from people saying, I'm watching this show with my kids, and out of nowhere comes the N-word. I guarantee you it sparked a conversation or two somewhere across the country where maybe a kid had not heard the word somehow and said to the parents, wait, what? What is that? What is that? And then the parents had to explain it. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
You know what? And is that for me? It's interesting to think that people have not been exposed to that word with all of the controversies that we've seen recently. This football player with the Philadelphia Eagles, I forget his name, he was on a hot mic using the word. Well, we spoke about Michael Richards. Yeah, but young kids, they may not have had the experience, but there's so much. Kids are exposed to so much in the news, 24-hour news cycle, on the internet, rap music, it's interesting to me that word has not been explained out. You know, time for that lesson to be had. But, you know, this topic, you think about it, a white family raising a black kid. We've seen this kind of play out in different ways as well. What about when a gay couple raises a child? We've had these questions about adoption and what experiences the parents have opposed to what the kid might have and what the impact on the child is going to be. This is just real life for what we're going through right now. And obviously the show is way.
I believe that a child should be adopted into a family that's going to support them and love them regardless of sexual orientation, color, or anything else. So I hope we've come a long way since 1978.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have. There's no question about it. And I think as we continue to be confronted with scenes like this on television, people are learning more like, hey, yeah, this is today. Like you said, Wendy, we hope that a loving couple no matter what their race or sexual preference is, can raise a kid the right way. But as we know, we live in a country right now where we are divided. Yep. I mean, you're red or you're blue. You know,
it's not black or white anymore. It's red or blue.
That's right. So we are always going to be talking about this. And it's actually a good marketing tool for the show, because look what we're talking about. This is us. A lot of people are going to tune in and watch this show now.
It's really great. And if you're up for a good cry, I swear to God, that is the show for you. You can purge your tears every week. Kathy has called in and wants to join the conversation. Kathy, we're talking to Matt McGill, formerly from WVON, Von Zahn. Von Zahn again.
That's right.
What's up, Kathy?
Good morning. First of all, I love your show, and I love This Is Us. We are in the process of adopting a black child. We're a white couple, a white family. And you would be shocked what people have said to us. How are you going to do this? How are you going to explain stuff? I had a woman online berate me because I didn't know what a king my son was going to be. And I'm like, no, I don't. But you know what? I also raised two daughters. My husband's from Pakistan, and I raised my two daughters throughout 9/11.
Wow,
and
that's...
I didn't know that was going to happen either. And there was a lot of things said at school that obviously came from the dinner table to my daughters during that time. And you know what? You don't know when you birth, adopt, whatever a child, you don't know what you're going to be faced with anyway.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't know 9/11 was going to happen with my half Pakistani children, yet I was faced with horror during that time.
Sure.
And had to protect my children like no other, and they heard words I had never even heard before. So, you know, to say black, white, left, right, whatever, you don't know what you're going to be faced with on a daily basis raising any child, biological or not. And if you love them and you have faith that God put them in your family for a reason, it'll work.
Matt, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I agree with it. I will say this about America. I think we know this. This country has the history between black people and white people, just between black people and white people. It is a very strong, controversial, and complicated mm-hmm. history. Mm-hmm. So whenever you talk about black and white, no matter what, whether it's adoption, whether it's integrating, anything, we're going to have strong conversations, and there are going to be very strong feelings out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you on everything, Kathy. It sounds like you've gone through some stuff already, and best of luck to you.
Yeah.
You know what? We've been blessed by God in so many ways, and we're continuing to look at it that way.
What a perfect attitude. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Matt, thank you. Really appreciate the time and the discussion, and watch the episode. If people haven't seen it, if you're a fan of the show, it's such a great moment. I know it was controversial. I don't think they were doing it to get press. I think they were doing it to be honest. But they really pulled it off, I thought.
It sounds like that. I didn't see the episode, but I can tell you this much. Delroy, if anybody can.
Delroy Lindo, a very powerful actor and did a great job as the judge. Matt McGill, again, we thank you. Appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Nice to talk to you.
All right, let's take a quick break. We've got news and then chemically engineered mosquitoes.
Who planned today's show? Because this is a
little bit of everything.
This is great.
A little bit of everything. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. That's pleasant.
Do you ever fall asleep in a tent and have that mosquito just going around your head all night long and you can't sleep?
Illinois is one of 20 states that the EPA has just approved to have a new kind of mosquito, something called mosquito mate. These are weaponized mosquitoes. Does it sound scary? It is scary. We'll explain everything to you right now. Akshat Rati joins us right now. Akshat is with the group Quartz, a reporter for Quartz. They're based in London. Akshat, please explain to me why we have new mosquitoes. What exactly is going on that would make us need new mosquitoes?
I would just calm listeners down and say this is not scary at all.
It's
trying to help us. It might sound scary, but it's not. And so what they're trying to do is use a bacteria that will infect the mosquitoes that this particular company called Mosquito Mate is breeding, and it will then let these mosquitoes out. Now, this bacteria has the capability of destroying the progeny of the mosquitoes that are infected. And so this way, it's able to reduce the population of mosquitoes outside, and hopefully you can have a peaceful sleep at night.
Is this prompted by the Zika virus or something else?
Yes, I mean, this has been going on for a while. The first trial was done much before Zika, actually, in Australia. So mosquitoes carry all sorts of diseases. Zika is just one of them. There's malaria, there's dengue.
West Nile?
West Nile. Mm-hmm. We want ways in which we can attack these specific mosquitoes as well. You know, there are many species of mosquitoes, but only a few carry diseases. And so what these guys have done is used an opportunity whenever diseases have struck to test this technology out. And it's been shown to be effective on a small scale in Brazil, in Australia, as I said, and in the states in Kentucky, New York, and California in their trials.
Have the mosquitoes mutated at all? I remember when we were growing up, these little, the Clark Company, I went to school with them, and there would be these trucks coming around just spraying.
Sure.
The Clark Company's still in business, and they've worked at eradicating a bunch of mosquitoes and helping to prevent the spread of Zika. But it seems like the mosquitoes are such a bigger problem now than they were when we were growing up. Are there just more of them?
There are two things that may speak to your perception, and I think that's a correct perception. There are more mosquitoes further north. First is climate change, so you have warming, and the weather is getting warmer, and so that's why you have, as you go north, you'll have more mosquitoes. And you're right, mutations occur. They're just natural genetic mutations. Every species wants to survive. And so I don't know of specific connections between spraying a particular pesticide and a mutation occurring, but it can happen. I think what we are now tackling here, and maybe some of the mutation aspect you're talking about, is that there is another way in which we can control mosquitoes. In this case, we are adding bacteria that are naturally existing bacteria just on top of a naturally existing mosquito. But there are companies that are trying to genetically modify mosquitoes and then let them out. And these genetically modified mosquitoes are just like the bacteria. They have their genes modified, but they go on and mate with a naturally occurring mosquito, and the progeny all die. So,
what if they bite us? Is there any difference if these weaponized mosquitoes bite us?
Nope. There's no harm to humans, and that's a nice thing. It's a very specific intervention. Where you have only this one species called the Albopictus that is going to have these bacteria on it. It will only go and breed with its own kind, its own species, so all the other mosquitoes that are not harmful will not be harmed. And because the bacteria only affects the reproductive cycle, it doesn't actually cause any other harm to humans or nature.
We're talking to Akshat Rathi. He is with Quartz, based in London, QZ.com, if you want to check out their website. To your knowledge, has this been done in either the insect world or the animal kingdom before, where in a lab they tried to do this with either bugs or with animals?
No, I mean, this is a very specific kind of intervention, and they came across it accidentally.
As most discoveries come across.
Yeah. Correct. Right. But that doesn't mean it's a bad idea. I think the way in which the EPA has gone about approving these trials is the right method, where you first try it on a small scale in a lab, then you try it on a small scale in a city or a town or a part of a town, and then you do it in multiple states, as they did it in Kentucky, New York, and California, and then you approve it. And they've only approved it in 20 states across the U.S., and these are states that have weather that is similar to Kentucky, New York, and California. In the southern states, where mosquitoes are a bigger problem, they haven't approved it because those trials haven't been done. So hopefully those trials will get done over there, and then it'll be applied over there as well.
Something that's really resonating with me that you said is climate change, because since we do have climate change, which, yes, is a very real thing, warmer temperatures are not killing off mosquitoes, isn't it? Don't they usually die at the first frost?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know if they die at the first frost, but if they do, the frost is getting later in the year, and so they will be around longer. The other thing is, in summer, when you have warmer temperatures for longer, you have a bigger population of mosquitoes. So not all of them die when the first frost comes by, right?
Is there an approximation of how many of these engineered mosquitoes will be released? It's got to be in the millions, right?
So the nice thing about bacteria versus genetically modified mosquitoes is that in genetically modified mosquitoes, they have a kill switch inbuilt, which is that once you release one genetically modified mosquito, it'll go mate with maybe one or two females. It'll die because its lifetime is done. And the genetically modified and the progeny will die, so there'll be no genetically modified mosquitoes created from it. But it means that you have to every time genetically modify the mosquito. And so you're paying this company the price.
Yeah.
With the bacteria, there is a small chance that, a decent amount of chance that some of the bacteria will get transferred to other mosquitoes, and those naturally occurring mosquitoes. And if they go on and mate, they will also kill the population. So there is more of a chance of you know, you will still have to release millions of mosquitoes to be able to control the population in a city. But there is, you know, it's slightly cheaper. The intervention is slightly cheaper than the genetically modified one.
Boy, isn't science cool?
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm. Aksha, thank you for your expertise in this. This is fascinating. And I'm still a little scared, but nowhere near as scared as before you spoke with us.
I'm happy to help.
You did a great job with that. That's Akshat Rati.
Thank
again
you.
With the Quartz, QZ.com, if you want more information. We'll take a quick break. And then a friend of ours that was on network TV yesterday, Pat McGann, did really well on Stephen Colbert's show. We'll talk to him and find out what went on behind the scenes. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
My daughter had ballet. My wife's like, yeah, get her dressed. She's got ballet. It's like, really? I have to get her dressed? Maybe that's a sign she's not ready for the performing arts. Maybe I should be bringing her to How to Get Dressed. And then I'll drop her off at listening.
I felt so sorry for our friend Pat McGann last night. He's on network TV on Colbert's show, and people are just laughing at him. They're just staring. They're just watching him stand there, and they're laughing at him. Pat, I felt awful for you last night.
Yeah, very self-conscious about that.
How exciting. You are just so funny.
You did
I got to tell you.
Oh, you guys are so nice. Thank you so much. You know what? I got a text Tuesday night. I ran the set at Gotham Comedy Club, and I got a text, and it said, if you don't suck, I'll put you on my radio show Thursday. And it was from Bill Leff.
How about that?
I'm actually glad he learned how to use his phone.
Yeah, it took me about a half an hour to get that out to you, Pat. Pat, take us to that moment where you're standing kind of at the edge of the stage. You haven't walked out yet. It's network TV. You know that there's a whole lot of people watching you. And Stephen Colbert is about to say your name. What's going on in your head and your heart at that moment?
You know what? I'll tell you something that no one who watched the show would know, and I think I can say this, but they pre-taped an interview before I came out that's going to air in a few weeks with Carol Burnett.
Wow.
And Carol Burnett was coming off stage as I was going on.
Wow.
Oh, so that really freaked you out even more.
It was more like, I was in awe of, like, you know, she's a legend. She did everything in comedy, and, you know, she's known across so many generations. So it was a good distraction, to be honest with you, you know?
Well, for people who know you, and I've seen you do stand up a bunch, you always, at the end of every set, you tug on your ear to let her mom know that you're okay. did you talk about that with Carol Burnett?
No, we didn't have any time to check.
No words.
Literally, like, going on. But yeah, I think you know, it's a little bit different. I'd been in that theater before when I did Letterman, and now they've reversed the set. The desk is on the other side of the set.
Yeah.
So when you come out, I could see Colbert right there and saw the monitor that he was reading off of. Like, he had his back toward back to me, and then just the guy, like the stage manager, like shoves you out there. Like, go, let's give you a nice nudge, and you're off.
There you are.
Since you were preoccupied with Carol Burnett, let's see how you react to it this time.
Welcome back. folks, my next guest is a comedian coming to us from Chicago. Please welcome Pat McGann.
Yeah, how'd that feel now?
Very cool, yeah. I didn't really hear it last night, so that was cool. You guys are quick.
Pat, do they go over word for word what you're going to say, or do they just leave it up to you and say, give us your best?
Word for word.
They do?
Submit a transcript. I think they have, you know, it's network television still, so I think they still have people look through it and see if you're saying company names too much or, you know.
Yeah. Where'd the trust go?
And make sure it's appropriate. Well, I open with a joke, my first joke. 75% of the asses I wipe aren't mine.
Yes.
And
yes.
they took a hard look at asses. I don't know what WGN Radio does, but
we're gonna.
We have a meeting now.
Yeah, there's gonna be a meeting after the show, Pat.
All right. Enough about you. How was it? Norman Reedus was there from The Walking Dead. Sean Astin from Stranger Things. You got two of the best guests on your night.
Yeah, that was very cool. I don't watch Walking Dead. I need to catch up on that. But a buddy of mine pointed out that he also had that show on A&E where he gets on motorcycles, they take a ride. And
yeah.
He did one with Chappelle. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Sean Astin, his dressing room was right next to me. Reedus was upstairs, so I didn't see him, but Sean Astin was right next to me. And we had a little moment in the hallway down there between like hair and makeup. He was so friendly, really nice dude. I mean, I grew up watching Goonies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rudy. That was right in my wheelhouse, so it was cool to talk with him. He was really nice.
Pat, what if you had said to Norman Reedus prior to the show, hey, Norman, would you mind switching with me? Because I've got some people coming in and would really love to see me go first. Would you have done that?
I would have loved that, because if I had any, like, creeping doubts last night, it was that the audience lines up outside like 3:30. They bring them in at 4:30. The show starts taping at 5:30. They did that extra interview with Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
I didn't get out there. They were sitting there for like 2.5 hours
Wow.
before I got out there. So I was like, just, I hope they're not too tired or worn out. Because it was a great show. Jon Stewart was on the show. He dropped in.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience was like, they were ecstatic all night. And you can only sustain that for so long, you know?
It's weird, you know, when I have to go do a live appearance, I always fret about it before I go on stage, and I hate waiting. I mean, that's why I get in here pretty much at 10 to 10, ready to just roll on the air. Were you getting nervous sitting around waiting? And because once you say your first word, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I was nervous. I mean, I'd be lying to say I wasn't. I was nervous, and it was, but I was a different nervous than I've been in the past. I felt a little bit more ready. And I was occupied. I had a couple buddies that run Gotham Comedy Club in New York that were in the dressing room. And then the show producer came down, and they were really, like, relaxing presence, you know? We were just having a casual conversation. And they gave me my space when I wanted it. And
oh,
just
nice.
Ran it in my head.
What was the reaction from your family, most notably your kids? Do they pay much attention to Daddy being on TV?
They don't. I mean, I don't think they really grasp it yet.
Your daughter told me she was watching Fallon last night. I don't know why. Why would she do that?
My wife said that two of them crashed. The youngest is the one that actually made it to Showtime.
Really?
And by the time I got on, he wasn't listening to me. He was just like saying, Dad's on TV. Dad's like, no. He wasn't. So it was that was cool to hear.
Well,
but it's changed so much. You know, when we were kids, everybody didn't have a video recorder or a phone that took images. So if your dad, think about it, Pat, if your dad had been on network TV, everybody in the country would have been talking about it. But now it's just, dad's on TV, whatever.
Yeah, right. They don't care. They're on TV, too. You know, everyone's on YouTube. And,
I know.
We are very proud of you and wanted to congratulate you and invite you to come up. Isn't he scheduled already?
Yeah, we're having you on in a few weeks. We'll ask you the same questions we asked you today.
Can't wait. I always love being with you guys. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for having me on.
We're so proud of you, and you really did. You just hit an absolute grand slam last night. You were so funny. So keep up the great work, Pat. And Zany's coming up in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks. Tuesday, the 21st, I'm in Old Town.
Mm-hmm.
And then the night before Thanksgiving, I'm in Rosemont.
Excellent.
Let's go White
Pat.
Sox.
Plug something else, though.
Sure.
Because this is near and dear to me. Cure It Foundation. It's this show that we're doing November 19th at Zany's in Rosemont. It goes towards helping families fighting pediatric cancer. And that's November 19th in Rosemont. So there's another opportunity to come out.
Excellent.
How can a guy be so funny and so nice at the same time? Seriously, Bill used to be.
Yeah, I was. But now Pat's picked up the mantle.
Right, yeah, whatever.
Congrats.
Thanks, Wendy.
We're
Thank
so
you.
Happy for you. That's Pat McGann, everybody. Go see him at Zany's.
Love him.
We'll take a quick break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys' tea.
I like Dean.
I like Dean a little bit more than you do. We've had this fight in the past, and I always win.
All right,
I like
you can
Dean about
him.
An inch more than you do. Dean Richards joins us right now to talk about the world of film and show business. Dean, last week we talked a little bit about the Hollywood harassment scandal. More and more names keep coming out. Every day you see another name or two, and every day you go, wait, no, how can that be? Jeffrey Tambor's name has come up.
I didn't think I heard Dean.
Oh, is he not there? Well, then unplay the song.
Play
we can't give a guy a theme song if he's not here.
He said he was going to be on. I have him all up and ready.
Oh.
I'll talk to you about Jeffrey Tambor.
It's so upsetting. Now, all right, this needs to be said right off the bat. If all these guys are really doing these things, then yeah, their names should definitely be brought out. And every day, like yesterday or the day before, it was Dustin Hoffman's name. And you go, not Dustin Hoffman. Today I'm reading all about Jeffrey Tambor, and I'm thinking, these are some of the Kevin Spacey. I mean, every name that comes out, you go, oh, no. So if they're guilty of these things, absolutely. They should absolutely be talked about and should pay a price. But it's just amazing what's going on.
And my thought was, and I brought this up before, what if people are just jumping on a bandwagon now, knowing that you can just mention someone's name?
Right.
If it happened, by all means, they should be prosecuted. They really should be.
Well, that's why I'm reading the story in Hollywood Reporter about Jeffrey Tambor, and the charges against him are brought about by a former assistant, somebody named Van Barnes, who evidently didn't really get along with Jeffrey Tambor, so we don't know if they didn't get along because there was harassment, or you know, you don't know which led to which, you know, in this particular case.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying, you know, if you have a vendetta with someone,
yeah,
this is kind of an easy way to throw it out there if it didn't happen.
Right.
If it did, and we don't know.
Right.
Then by absolutely. Jeffrey Tambor is on, I loved him on the.
He's on Transparent right now.
Right. What was the Larry Sanders show?
Yeah. He was Hank Kingsley.
Hey now.
Yeah.
Applesauce.
Which when we met him, do you remember how that went? Do you remember what you said to him?
I'm sure I don't remember, but I'm sure I said, hey now.
You went into the green room, you stuck out your hand and you said, hey now. And he smiled very politely. And shook your hand.
And so what? What was I supposed to do? Get out of here?
It was just funny that you gave him his own catchphrase.
You think I'm the first person to have done that?
I think he gets it all day.
So he was used to it. He was very polite. What was I supposed to do to him?
Somebody else's catchphrase.
I wish you had one. I would have done your catchphrase.
My catchphrase.
Are we getting Dean on the phone or what? Why does he do this to us?
The actor Jeffrey Tambor, this is from Hollywood Reporter, who has won 2 Emmys for his work on Transparent, stands accused by his former assistant, transgender actress Van Barnes, says series creator Jill Holloway, we are cooperating with the investigation into this matter. Amazon Studios is on high alert following the October 17th resignation of their chief, Roy Price, over claims he made lewd remarks to Man in the High Castle. Executive producer Isa Hackett Dix is investigating allegations that Transparent star Jeffrey Tambor behaved in a sexually inappropriate manner toward his assistant. They're very vague throughout the story as to exactly what went on. They just say that. They kind of reiterate that some inappropriate gestures were made made in a sexually inappropriate manner, but they don't really go into great detail as to what they were.
And how about the Kevin Spacey news? Speaking of entertainment news, he's being replaced by Christopher Plummer in this new movie.
Oh.
You didn't know this?
No. Which of the new movies?
All the Money in the World. They had already shot that, and actor Kevin Spacey, facing mounting allegations of sexual harassment and assault, will no longer appear in Ridley Scott's forthcoming drama, All the Money in the World, according to 2 sources close to the firm. The filmmakers have taken the rare move of planning to completely edit Kevin Spacey out of the film and then replace him with Christopher Plummer.
I have to say, even though that's an enormous undertaking to do this, because those scenes have been shot, if they want this movie to go anywhere, they have to do it. You can't just make a movie and have it sit on a shelf.
That's what Dean was thinking.
Dean, were you thinking of something similar?
Did you forget about us? Christopher Plummer will take over Spacey's role in the film, which, despite the last-minute change, is still set for release on December 22nd. And most of the shots included Kevin Spacey alone, so those will be easy to retake with Christopher Plummer. But then there are other scenes where they have to reshoot them.
He's interacting with other actors and actresses.
Dean is here with us now.
I'm trying to figure out who I can possibly blame my absence
Blame it on society, Dean.
Blame it on me. I'll take it.
Blame it on the moonlight.
This was the first time I was super excited to talk to you because I actually sat my butt in a theater seat last night.
The first time you've been excited to talk to me.
Genuinely excited.
More excited than usual. I finally went to a movie last night. I went to see It.
Dean, for the record, I'm always excited. Wendy's just kind of faking it. But last night she went to see a movie and couldn't wait to tell you about it.
I'm a little behind, but...
This is the first time I've been excited to hear that you went to see a movie.
And can I just tell you the best part? I went with my son Dylan, who's 14, and we went to see It, and we went to the brand new Oak Brook AMC theaters with the reclining seats, which are awesome.
Oh, those are nice. Those are nice slash. I hate them.
Mm-mm. Do you?
Because I fall asleep.
Too relaxing. Too
I didn't
relaxing.
Completely recline, but can I tell you, Dylan and I were the only two people in the theater,
well, the
and it was
been
awesome.
Out for 6 months or something.
Well, I know.
It's been out for a while.
Maybe the fact that you both dress like scary clowns frightened away other theater patrons.
Maybe.
The scary clowns were busy last night.
Yes.
Everyone knows they have meetings on Wednesdays.
Yep.
I just want to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I think Tim Curry was a better Pennywise.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because I really enjoyed, but did you think it was the scariest movie you've ever seen?
I was afraid I was going to wet my pants. That's what I was worried about. I had a pair of Depends in my purse just in case. No,
safe.
I didn't. But I really heard everybody, oh, this is going to be so scary. I mean, it wasn't that scary.
There were a couple of shock moments, but I've been far more scared.
Me too.
At other movies, but... It's very entertaining.
I didn't look at my watch once.
Yeah. No, it's a good movie. I enjoyed it, I got to say. I'm not a huge fan of the horror genre, but I did enjoy this one. Did you see It, Bill?
I still haven't seen it. No. I will.
It's really good.
I know.
It's a really entertaining. I love having the theater to myself. I'm going to wait till it's just about ready to get out of the big screen theaters.
Yeah, that is nice. Or if you go during the day, I guess you can't.
Go during a commercial break.
Dean was at a movie earlier today.
I know.
That's where I've been for the last 15 minutes.
Dean, really quickly, before we were talking to you, we were talking about how every day now more and more actors, producers, directors, industry people are being named.
That's all I'm reporting on now.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I was going through my scripts this morning for the TV morning news. Practically every story is... sexual assault and harassment. It's like, Dean's police blotter.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to keep going. I have a sick feeling.
So in the last 24 hours, there was a story about Charlie Sheen that he may have harassed Corey Haim years ago when they were working on a movie together.
Yeah, he was accused, Charlie Sheen.
I didn't hear that one.
Accused of raping Corey Haim when they made the movie Lucas here in the Chicago area in 1986. Friends of Corey Haim claim that the late actor, Corey Haim died in 2012, had told them the story of how he got high with Charlie Sheen. They wound up having what sounds like consensual sex, but they did wind up having sex, and when Corey Haim went back to do it another time, Charlie Sheen didn't want anything to do with them, and then a couple of years later, they did it again. I mean, the whole thing is so
bizarre. Is Corey Feldman the one reporting this story?
No, these are a story from a former actor. I don't recall his name. It's not a huge name, and it's not Corey Feldman, but it was corroborated by a number of other friends of Corey Haim who said that they also heard that same story. Charlie Sheen vehemently denying that any of it happened, of course.
Of course.
New allegations against Kevin Spacey now to add to his woes, a Boston news anchor's son 2 years ago claims that he was having drinks with Kevin Spacey in a bar, that he got drunk, and Kevin Spacey acted inappropriately with him, groping him. So, you know, that's still liable for both civil and criminal action in that state, in Massachusetts. On top of that now with Kevin Spacey, and I've never heard this ever happening before, Kevin Spacey is going to be replaced in a movie in which he co-starred that's coming out in 7 weeks. This movie that's called All the Money in the World, in which Spacey co-stars with Michelle Williams and Mark Wahlberg in this, the story of the kidnapping of J. Paul Getty's grandchild. They are literally taking every scene out of the movie that Kevin Spacey was in and reshooting it all with actor Christopher Plummer. I have never heard of anything
but
like that.
They have
happening.
No choice now if they want to release this movie.
They have no choice. I mean, it's going to be, otherwise it would have been a complete distraction.
Sure.
And probably meant death for the movie. So that at least this way they have a fighting chance that people will go see the movie and appreciate the movie for the movie. Kevin Spacey has also been cut out of a Carol Burnett special that was scheduled to run later on this month. So
he is completely finished.
He is done.
And such a great actor. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know how you recover from
you can't.
Something like that. I don't know how much treatment there is in the world. I don't know how much apology there is. I just don't know.
You
can
apologize for one time, not these repeat offenses, allegedly.
People are forgiving, but I mean, there's obviously there seems to be a pattern. Kevin Spacey has it was only the initial allegation in which Kevin Spacey said that if it happened, he's sorry, but he doesn't really remember. But there's been no apology, there's been no denial, there's been no nothing on any of the Kevin Spacey fronts. The Harvey Weinstein stories could result in criminal action later on this week. So, you know, that's happening. But now allegations have come out against Jeffrey Tambor,
right,
by a former assistant on the TV show Transparent. Yesterday, Terry Crews, the actor who is in Brooklyn Nine-Nine right now with Andy Samberg, he was in Everybody Hates Chris. He was the father on that show. He was one of the old Spice guys in those commercials. He claims that he was groped by a Hollywood executive, and he filed charges yesterday on that. So literally what you guys are saying is that there are new allegations. There were like 5 new allegations just yesterday.
Every day. Portia de Rossi was telling a story about Steven Seagal, how he was unzipping his pants in an audition. And, yeah, it's amazing.
Can't keep up with it all.
All right. Jeez. We'll take a quick break.
And Wendy in diapers.
Right. Well,
I didn't have to.
That's separate. True.
Next person to sit in that chair. Enjoy the movie.
I stayed dry.
We'll take a quick break.
Wendy's trying to get a new endorsement.
Right. Trying. We'll see what happens. It could pay off.
Did it scare me? It depends.
All right. More with Dean Richards next at Phil and Wendy on WGN. Dean Richards is here. There's some new movies opening this weekend that you may want to see. One of them, a remake of the great Murder on the Orient Express. First, Dean, before you talk about this one, the first one, the Albert Finney Murder on the Orient Express, great movie, wasn't it?
It was. And you would think that it would be pretty hard to top what is a classic like that, although there have been about 4 or 5 different versions of Murder on the Orient Express.
I didn't know that.
It's Agatha Christie's probably her most famous murder mystery. Mm-hmm. And, it certainly is compelling in lots of different ways, but you would think, what else could they do? Well, it turns out that in many ways, Kenneth Branagh does top the previous versions of this movie. He not only stars in this movie, but he also directs the film, this amazingly star-studded film that's got Dame Judi Dench and Josh Gad and Johnny Depp and Michelle Pfeiffer and, I'm forgetting half the names who are in this. It's just one superstar.
Daisy Ridley?
Oscar winner after another.
From Star Wars?
From Star Wars is in the movie. And it's the retelling of this famous murder mystery of a bunch of people who are traveling on this very exotic train travel. Somebody is murdered, and it's up to the world's most famous detective, who was on the who happens to also be on the train, to solve the mystery. And not to give away the endings of anything, but what's great about this movie, and what I was a little disappointed in the movie, is the way that this movie was made. I'm perfectly satisfied with the storytelling, mm-hmm. and everything like that. This is one of the most spectacular looking films that I've ever seen. That was shot in the same route, the same gorgeous landscapes and backgrounds. How they even shot some of this to make it look as though they were on a moving train is pretty spectacular. So beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I would just say to director Kenneth Branagh, who is also quite good, all the acting is just fine in the movie, if he had paid as much attention to the pacing of this film as he did the look and the cinematography of the film, it would have been a superstar Oscar winner. Mm. The pacing of it is off. It's kind of a meticulous setup to introduce these many, many, many characters and explain who they are and what their motives might be. And why they might be a suspect for a murder. That they take plenty of time for that,
mm-hmm.
But then the resolution of the movie is kind of hurried.
Hmm.
The last part of the movie where the crime is resolved happens pretty quickly. And while I'm not a fan of 3-hour movies, it clocks in at just a little bit over 2 hours. It's a very easy movie to watch. I think this is a case where I would have liked a little more length for a little more even pacing and explanation of what happened at the end.
Yeah.
It almost happens a little bit too fast.
So that's its fault. What is the Dean's List on this?
The Dean's List on this is Dean's List B.
I think
it's very much still worth watching. If you're a fan of murder mysteries, whodunits, you're going to definitely enjoy this movie.
And then really quick, we only have a minute, but Daddy's Home 2, the sequel to, I think, Daddy's Home, right?
That's correct.
Was I right on that one?
That's correct. There was not a Daddy's Home 1.5.
No, there should have been.
They went right from 1 right to number
Greedy.
2. They're big fans of whole numbers over at Paramount Pictures. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
This is the film that brought the unlikely pairing of Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg as a father and stepfather trying to get along. The first film, pretty successful. So they tried it again. The basic premise of this one is sort of the paternal version to that Bad Moms Christmas movie that I hated
really?
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
In which, you not only got you not only have your father and stepfather, now you've got their fathers coming to spend Christmas with them. Mark Wahlberg's father, my close personal friend Mel Gibson.
Yes.
And Will Ferrell's father in the movie, John Lithgow. And the performances are fine and the jokes are fine and there's nothing groundbreaking in this movie. There are some definite laughs to be had. I'm calling this a harmless Dean's List C.
Oh, that's all right.
I didn't hate this.
Yeah.
It's also rated PG-13 and not R like the Bad Moms movie was. Not that I mind R-rated movies,
right.
But sometimes it seems really gratuitous and they're trying so hard to be outrageous and raunchy. This one stays a little above that grade, and I thought it was a little more palatable than the other one.
Very good. Well, thank you, Dean.
I gave that a C.
C.
Thanks,
right.
Dean.
Easy. That's Dean Richards, everybody.
You guys try to be on time for this segment next week.
We're going to do our best. Thank you, Dean. Have a good
Very
weekend.
Very irresponsible.
I know. We apologize. You'll get a fruit basket in the mail. Thanks, Dean. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.